set the score and let it out, afraid of all the judgment.
It is time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the editor and publisher of the Timberjades, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, good to talk to you again.
Happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, there's no lack of stories to talk about today, that's for sure. In the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about increasing COVID numbers. First, we talked about Boyce Fort, and then last week, Ely. You have a new story about an assisted living place in Ely where there have been some deaths due to COVID. Fill us in on what's happening there.
Yeah, this is at the Carefree Living Facility in Ely, and until about a week or so ago, they hadn't had any cases there. Now, we had reported last week that they had had two cases among residents and then one case in a staff member, positive tests for COVID. And apparently it's grown a lot since then, although at this point you can't get exact numbers. The company, Spectrum Health, which runs that facility, has been pretty, closed-mouthed about what's happening there. But they did report this week four deaths, and they did not specifically state that they were related to COVID, but they posted them on the COVID-19 page on their website. So I think, reading between the lines, it certainly appears that they would be COVID-related. And then they also indicated in a posting on that same page that they are praying for the other COVID patients who, are still struggling with the disease there. So it certainly sounds like there's a significant outbreak there for potential deaths and also additional patients who are obviously struggling with the illness at the same time. So we don't know the exact number. We've put in calls and emails to the CEO of Spectrum, and we have not gotten a response. So that's troubling. We hope to maybe get some additional numbers here later in the week when the county, or soon anyway, when St. Louis County puts out an update. They do a weekly update, and we don't have those numbers at this point. So we're still following this, obviously, very closely. This certainly suggests that there's a fairly significant outbreak in Ely, and we've heard from other sources unofficially that it is a pretty serious situation in Ely right now with the COVID-19 outbreak. But again, it's difficult to get information, which is frustrating. And, we had talked about this last week, actually, that it's so much easier to get information on the reservations right now. And we talked about that, whereas, off the reservation, it's very hard to get information about what's happening in your own community, which is a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. We're hearing that from all across northern Minnesota, that it is difficult to get the information. And, this isn't just wanting to know the details. This is for public health, because, of course, people work at that assisted living place in Ely. They may be out in community. I mean, it's got a lot of effects that could really ripple forward. So I'm frustrated as well. I wish we had more information, or that people were required to give certain information. But, it's a pandemic we've never been through before. So,
yep, for sure.
Well, let's move on to another story. Since the last time we talked, there was a kidnapping that ended in Orr in violence. Tell us what happened there.
Yeah, this was interesting. Tuesday evening, we had a kidnapping in International Falls, a male, and we don't exactly have his age, kidnapped a 28-year-old woman who apparently he'd had a previous relationship with. He kidnapped her, fled in a vehicle with this woman, and they headed south on Highway 53. Now, I don't know exactly, we don't have all the details because the press release provided by the Cochise County Sheriff did not have all the information, and we weren't able to get any more details. But apparently somebody witnessed the kidnapping. So there was a report, and it resulted in a very substantial law enforcement response, including many, many different agencies, the State Patrol, St. Louis County, and Cochise County Sheriff. We had the FBI involved, DNR conservation officers. I mean, you had just this convergence of law enforcement into the area. This vehicle was headed south on Highway 53. They did, at some point, employ those devices that, blow out your tires. They apparently, the van did have its tires blown out at some point. They continued to drive, however, I guess on the rims, and they made it as far as Orr before the van pulled into a parking lot at the North Country Inn, right on Highway 53 there in Orr. And he stopped. At that point, the female abductee was able to jump out of the car and flee, and she was safe. But the kidnapper ended up, he was surrounded by law enforcement at that point, and he decided to shoot himself in the head. So obviously it ended violently and a very unfortunate situation. We don't have all the details as far as what motivated this kidnapping, but definitely kind of a shocking event Tuesday night in Orr.
Well, let's move on to another story you've been covering. Schools have not been in session all that long. You have a story about some reactions from area teachers.
Yeah, the teachers in the St. Louis County School District, they had a pretty strong message this week for school board members and for the superintendent. They've been teaching both in-person students in their classrooms as well as, you know, the distance learning students because, you know, they've got some parents who are not sending their kids to school. And this is happening at schools all across, you know, the state. And they say that the current situation that teachers are having to spend far more time, dealing with students, and also it's taking away from their prep time and, you know, some of the other work that they end up needing to do during the course of a typical school day. And they say it's just, it's already wearing teachers out, and they've only been there for 2 weeks. And so they say something has to change. They also complain that they're not getting cleaning supplies in their classrooms like they should. Sounds like the district has purchased those. It's just for whatever reason, they're just not getting distributed and, in a timely manner out to some of the classrooms. So we don't know all the details on that one. But it's certainly on the question of the amount of time that it's taking, the teachers are already saying, you know, something's got to give here. What they're doing now is not working. And, you know, you figure they're 2 weeks in. So it's not like they're frustrated at the end of the year and they're wore out. I mean, they're wore out, you know, after 2 weeks. So clearly this is going to be a struggle. It's going to be something that I think there's going to be a lot of adaptation that's going to have to take place, you know, as they try to figure out what's going to work. One of the things they did talk about was possibly moving to where they would have certain teachers who would just teach the students who are learning from home. You know, let's say, you've got a class and you've got, you know, some in person, you've got some, you know, you've got a teacher working with both sets of students. In this case, you'd have one teacher and say in the St. Louis County School District where you've got multiple schools in different communities, you could have one teacher who teaches, you know, that subject or say grade three of all of the students who are learning from home. And so you would have just, you know, in-person teachers or online teachers. You wouldn't have teachers who are having to do both. And so that's something that they're going to look at and see how feasible that idea is. But, you know, clearly this indicates that bringing students back into the classroom is going to be a lot more challenging, I think, than what maybe had been anticipated. I mean, everyone knew it was going to be a challenge, but, you know, 2142 thought they had a plan that, you know, was going to work, and clearly the teachers are saying it's not working at this point and something's going to have to change. So we will be following this one closely because obviously it's a big issue.
Yeah. You know, they kind of, as before school started, they talked about that they had, you know, with last spring, teachers had been through this before, but you had that complication of some students there, some students distance learning. But on the other hand, you know, parents have to work. I mean, there's just no great answers to any of this right now. And we're even hearing that some of the school districts throughout northern Minnesota are struggling with keeping paraprofessionals employed because there's so much to do and not always the greatest paying sort of job, but really necessary in a school. So it's going to have a lot of implications. Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to the elections of 2020. You have a story about some recent polls by SurveyUSA. First, tell us who they are and why you trust their methods.
Well, SurveyUSA is a well-known polling organization. In fact, they get an A rating from 538.com. That's Nate Silver, who does a lot of election modeling, and he's got a very excellent track record. So, you know, I take what he says fairly seriously. But SurveyUSA just came out with a poll here last week, and some subsequent polling actually has confirmed These numbers have meshed very closely with the numbers that Survey USA found. But what I liked about the Survey USA poll was that it really delved into a lot of detail, and it was quite interesting. And it also gives us a very good idea as to why we have seen so much of the two presidential candidates in northern Minnesota, particularly the Trump campaign. I mean, we've had just this steady stream of, you know, Trump campaign surrogates. We've had the vice president here. And then, of course, today we've got President Trump in Bemidji, and we've got presidential candidate Vice President Joe Biden in Duluth. And there's a reason there's so much focus on northern Minnesota here, and that's because the polling showed that when you get in the metro area and most of southern Minnesota, Joe Biden has a pretty healthy lead. In fact, the poll found that statewide, Biden was leading by a 42 to 40% margin, so about a 9-point spread. That's not terribly close, but when you get into northern Minnesota, those margins flip, and flip fairly dramatically. Trump is leading very widely in northern Minnesota and northeastern Minnesota, and they didn't really define northeastern Minnesota, but I think, you know, we can get a general idea that that, you know, assume that's sort of the 8th district. And in northeastern Minnesota, they found Trump with a 61 to 37% lead. So, I mean, that's a huge margin, and it's an improvement over the 54 to 38 margin by which Trump won the 8th district in 2016. So it suggests, anyway, that Trump has made further inroads in northern Minnesota. And clearly, I think that's why the Trump campaign is spending a lot of time and money here trying to, you know, get out the vote in favor of Trump, figuring that this is the most fertile territory for him to make up ground against the vote elsewhere in Minnesota, which is likely to go pretty strongly against. And there were a lot of interesting other findings in here, too. One showed the stark breakdown in terms of who intends to vote when and how they plan to cast their vote. They asked people, you know, if they plan to vote in person or vote early, either by mail or in person. And they found that Minnesotans who plan to cast their ballots in person on Election Day, among that group, Trump is leading 59 to 32%. So, I mean, that's a huge margin. Among those who indicated they plan to vote by mail, those voters backed Biden by an astonishing 71 to 16% margin. So clearly there's a huge difference between, you know, the types of, you know, voters we're talking about here in terms of how they plan to vote and who they plan to vote for. And, you know, we're seeing similar numbers in other states too, which of course raises this idea that's been talked about a fair bit now, which is that initial election returns from a lot of states, including Minnesota, you know, are likely to show, you know, Trump leading in terms of, you know, votes on Election Day. But then by the time, you know, the mail-in ballots are counted, and in Minnesota, I think they're counted kind of at the same time as the other ballots. But in other states, it doesn't work that way. So we may not see that big shift. They call it the blue shift. And we may not see that as much in Minnesota, but I think other states, we're probably going to see that. And there could be a lot of uncertainty. You know, it's entirely possible we won't know who won the election on election night. In fact, it's a lot of forecasters, they're saying it's looking increasingly unlikely that we will know. And that's because there's such a difference between, you know, how Democratic supporting voters intend to vote and how Republican leaning voters are going to be voting this election. So very interesting in terms of that difference, I think.
Yeah, and we should remind folks that today's the first day that you can vote early, and your ballots, and we haven't received ours yet, but the ballots should be coming out soon, and it's recommended to get those back in the mail or drop them off at your courthouse early as well. And the Secretary of State's site in Minnesota has information how you can track that ballot so you can be rest assured that your vote will be counted. And that's at mnvotes.org to find out all of that information. It's going to be interesting.
It sure is.
It's Marshall Helmberger. Before we go, how about some good news? How are the colors looking in northeastern Minnesota?
I tell you what, the fall color up here, you know, we have two color seasons. We have the maples, which are right now, they are very close to peak, if not just absolute peak. I mean, they are gorgeous. I think the weather we've been having between the, you know, the cool nights, cold nights, in fact, we were 22 degrees, I think, you know, on Thursday morning and at our house. And between that and then a lot of sunshine during the day, it's really made for spectacular colors. The maples, it's been a few years since I've seen them this bright. And everything else seems to be very bright. So I would say right now, if you want to see the reds and the oranges of the maples, you should be up in this area driving around this weekend, because I'll tell you what, it is really just about peak. And then, of course, we'll have the aspen peak. That'll be coming probably in a couple more weeks. So, but right now, I would say we are in the thick of it.
Yeah. Once again, the answer to everything is get outside, I think.
Definitely.
It's Marshall Helmberger. It's the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. Thanks for your time, Marshall.
Thank you, Heidi. Take care.